What do you think is the biggest gut mistakes that people or cancer survivors are making at this point in time?
Throwing darts at the wall. Shiny object syndrome. I saw it on social media. I saw it on TikTok. I saw it on Instagram. When people think about root cause healing, it's helping your immune system stay regulated.
We could probably be eating a perfect diet, but if our nervous system is completely dysregulated, that can have an effect on our digestion as well.
Karan Krishnan, he is a microbiologist. He was talking about 60% of GI issues being resolved if we would just sit down with our food, chew, be undistracted.
What are some of the first steps that they can take walking out of treatments that can help put them on a solid path going forward?
One thing we see post-illness, it could be foodborne illness or another virus sickness, could be that you took antibiotics, is that your pancreas.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to Cancer Proof Living. I'm so glad you're here. I'm Michelle, an 8-year non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer survivor, a mom, and certified integrative nutrition health coach. After cancer, I wanted more than just survival, so I built the healing roadmap that I couldn't find. Now I guide survivors and cancer-conscious humans to detox, rebuild, and thrive. In this episode, I'm talking with Liz Roman. And you guys, I have to say it, it may be one of the most important episodes of 2026. And that's because we talk all about gut health. We specifically dive deep into how to rebuild the gut after cancer treatments. Liz tells us where to start, what to avoid, and common mistakes we're making when it comes to rebuilding and nourishing the gut. This episode is packed with valuable information, and it isn't just for cancer survivors. She touches on hormonal imbalances and autoimmune issues as well. Liz Roman, famously known as the Poop Queen, is a board-certified functional nutritional practitioner and a master restorative wellness practitioner. She specializes in gut health and holistic healing. And as the founder and the co-owner of Fit Mom, a top-tier functional nutrition practice, Liz is dedicated to uncovering and addressing the root causes of digestive disorders, hormonal imbalances, autoimmune challenges, and metabolic health issues. She is also the co-host of the Top 100 podcast in Alternative Health, the Health Revival Show, where she shares powerful, down-to-earth health strategies that empower women to reclaim control over their well-being. Share this episode with anyone who is rebuilding their health after cancer, or if they're struggling with hormonal imbalances or autoimmune disorders. I'm so excited for you guys to hear it. So grab a pen and paper because you will definitely need it for this episode. Let's get it started. Hello, everyone. I'm so excited to have Liz on today. You are going to love this episode. We are talking all things gut related, all things constipation, cancer prevention, cancer recovery. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I think it's one of the most important episodes of the year. So I'm glad that you were able to join us. Liz, thank you so much to be on the show. I'm just so excited, honestly. And I would love to hear just a little bit more about you and just how you fell into this poop queen role, how you got into gut health. Did it choose you or did you choose it?
Oh, it chose me. So it's kind of funny in terms of just the Instagram handle. This actually came up. We were podcasting a few years back and I'm like, you know, I'm just going to share my story vulnerably. And I don't care if people think it's taboo. Everyone poops. And I am, you know, like niching down on this because for a long time, I'd just been doing functional medicine kind of broadly, shared my story with children's rheumatoid arthritis as a young child, being put on prednisone and methotrexate, these heavy steroids, gaining a ton of weight, had horrible periods, was put on birth control. Then I'm going through years of constipation and I'm going to the doctors and everything is like, you're normal. I'm like, I am not normal. I cannot poo. I have skin issues. I have acne. I have white spots on my back. I have brain fog. I cannot get this weight off. No matter what I'm doing, there was a season that I did very extreme Weight Watchers and training twice a day in college because I had the time, but it was not healthy, right? And so I lost the 40 pounds, but I gained 50 back. And at that point in my life, I said, I have got to figure this out. This is unsustainable for me to live off of, you know, these little rats. I remember like all the 100 calorie packs and the rat. I'm like, this also just can't be good for me to eat all this processed foods. But I would buy it because I didn't know anything other than how to count points at that point in time in my life. And so finally I'm 20 and I'm like, Dad, we got to go get something checked out, you know, because something is seriously off. I cannot go to the bathroom. My roommates would call it like victory and we would like celebrate if I pooped. And so I'm sitting there one night, I'm scheduled for my colonoscopy. I have this 64 ounce orange laxative solution in front of me. And I call my dad, I say, cancel the appointment. I can't drink this. He says, babe, why don't you just treat it like a drinking game? So got a shot glass out and I took 64 ounces of that orange laxative solution, 64 shots.
I love that your dad suggested that. That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah. You know, and he was like never a big drinker or anything like that. So it was really funny to hear it coming from him. But we go, I actually like woke up towards the end of it. It was kind of strange. Obviously, I didn't feel anything because I was like in that daze. But lo and behold, everything was normal. And the solution was for me to drink more water, eat more fiber, and take Miralax. And I was just so at a loss because, again, there are so many other symptoms beyond that. And for anybody listening to this, if you've been severely impacted and constipated, it's painful. You're scared almost to go to the bathroom because it hurts. And then if you are taking Miralax, you're having all this horrible cramping and then almost urgency, right? There would be times that it would hit me out of nowhere, seemingly when I'd be out with friends and I'm like racing to the bathroom, hoping to make it in time. And you're like in that sweat, that cold, hot sweat. It was just awful. And fast forward about 3 years, I moved up to the Chicagoland area and I go to an OBGYN who was one of the best in the area. And I was getting my IUD replaced. And I said to her, you know, I'd really like to talk to you about my weight. I am really struggling and I'm also exhausted. Like I really feel something is off here. And she says to me, and she was really fit, Dr. Judy, she was such a cute woman, but really petite, nice muscle tone. Well, you know, it's all about calories in, calories out. Just eat 1,200 calories a day and eventually it's going to come off. And I'm like, I'm doing this. I'm going to do this.
Oh my gosh. And they're like, 1,200 calories a day.
I mean, I'm an 80s baby. You're just a couple of years older than me. And so it's like, that's the era we grew up in, right? Fat-free everything. 1,200 calories. I mean, it was just so discouraging. And that honestly was the last time that I ever asked a conventional doctor for help because so many people had just swept those symptoms that I was struggling with under the rug. Met a friend who told me about a doctor she was seeing, went to him, and that's when I found out that I had Hashimoto's. I did not have anything off with my thyroid labs in terms of my TSH or my thyroid hormones, T3, T4. So if you follow me at all on Instagram, I have lots of content on this, but any panel that we run, we're always looking at the antibodies because you can have autoimmune brewing in the body for years before it's ever going to shift and you're going to see it with your TSH. So
was it a functional doctor that you went to find those answers?
Yeah, it was.
That must have been so discouraging for years and years to go to doctor after doctor and just hear the same things over and over. And it's so frustrating. Like you think I haven't thought of just drinking water and eating fiber.
And I was taking Miralax and I was saying to them, this is, it was miserable. I talk a lot about it today as Miratox because now I know what the ingredients are and why it's so harsh on the body. Your body is literally trying to expel it. And that's why, I mean, it is a very strong osmotic laxative. So it'll pull water into the bowels, but then you get that rushing urgency. So yeah, it was very frustrating. And, you know, in addition to having Hashimoto's, I did have a lot of things going on within my gut. So I had a yeast overgrowth. Yes, I had mold toxicity. I had a parasite. I had all kinds of things. And truly, that is what propelled me forward to want to study nutrition and functional medicine. Because in that process, I would not have made it had I not had my now husband, but he was my boyfriend at the time, and the girl that had gone to see this doctor before me. There was no support in between. I remember leaving with a binder of my test results, a list of foods that I should eat, which is like autoimmune paleo on crack. Like there was so much that I could not have. And I bawled my eyes out all the way from Lamont back to Lyle, where I just was like, what am I? My social life is gone. I don't know where, like, even to turn for recipes. what am I going to do? And thankfully, both of them were just very encouraging and, you know, focus on what you can have, not what you can't have, those types of things. And so within my functional practice that we've built today, we really focus on that support and that care between, you know, our calls with clients, because we work with women all over the world via telehealth, and we do a lot of support on the dietary side because we use a lot of different dietary strategies and different phases that we're going through. But I mean, yes, his protocols worked. They helped me, right? I started to see better bowel movements, less brain fog, less acne and skin issues, and eventually the weight started to come off, but I was very alone in that, in terms of feeling like I was on an island. I remember one day we were in our apartment in Lyle and I was like gagging on this. I don't even remember what it was. It was probably like a glutathione or something, like an ALA. It was like a liquid supplement you had to keep in the fridge. And it was so bad. I called the office and I said to her, I'm paying $400 a month in supplements and I'm gagging on it. Like, there has to be something else that we can do to get through this protocol without all of this, you know, in terms of the amount of supplements that he gave me. And so after the 6 months, he wanted to move into like a heavy metal detox. And I just said, you know, thanks, I'm good, I'm out. And from there, I just continued to work on studying and finding other mentors throughout, you know, the time that I was going through my journey. And then about 4 years ago now, I met someone named Vince Pitstick. He owns Metabolic Mentor University and Vital Coaching. I'm actually going to speak at his event, the Hybrid Health Summit in Miami here in a couple of months. And he changed the game for me. Mentioned this to you before we started recording, but I was around 160 pounds doing all the things diet-wise. I had, you know, already gone through all the functional work with the gut protocols and everything, but I couldn't get that last like 20 off. And I was just inflamed. And so going through some different protocols for my genetics and now learning how to live by, you know, my genes and understand in certain seasons what I need to be doing. I've had another baby, dropped back to pre-pregnancy weight, and just the power of utilizing that knowledge, not only for myself, but also for my clients, has just been a game changer. So there are amazing mentors out there that can help. And I would just say to people, if you feel alone right now, we get it. I know you do too, Michelle, because it's any journey that you're walking, whether it's a cancer diagnosis, you're caring for a parent. I cared for my mom with ALS and I actually took my mom to this doctor too, just like grasping at straws. Was there things that, you know, he could do to help her? And unfortunately, she was a little bit too far progressed, but functional medicine truly changed my life. And so the Poop Queen comes from 8 years of chronic constipation to me now sharing my story of reversing that, healing the gut, reversing Hashimoto's, and helping, you know, other women do the same so that they don't have to take a decade, or it was even more than a decade, right, to get to the root cause of what's going on.
Yeah. And, you know, thank you for sharing your story. I'm so sorry that you had to go through all those years of suffering. And I know exactly what you're talking about with the isolation, the feeling alone, not knowing who to turn to. There's no one that else is going through the exact same thing as you. And it can just, you can get depressed. You can get anxious about it. It can completely affect your mental and emotional health, which then also affects your body and starts the vicious cycle all over again. But I give you a lot of credit for not giving up and for, no pun intended, listening to your gut, right? When the other doctor said, hey, heavy metal detox, let's go through this. And you're like, no, I need a break. I need to figure out something else. Sometimes we have to do that too. Getting quiet, listening to our bodies, understanding what feels right for us at that point in time. As you know, we were talking offline about this too, like functional medicine has changed my life as well. I think it's the only kind of medicine that I really follow and believe in at this point in time. So I'm so glad that you were able to find not only a mentor, but different testing, right? The best thing about functional medicine is that it's always changing. There's always new things coming out. As we were saying, 8 years ago versus now, 5 years ago versus now, there's so much new protocols, new information. When you mentioned the genetic testing to me, it didn't even like cross my mind. I mean, of course, I know we all carry genes. I know I have like the MTHFR gene and things like that, but and that we're all bio-individual, but taking it to the next level of like, no, really, what are these genes doing? How do we need to support our body in a different way? And it's also a really good reminder that not everything is a one-size-fits-all. You can go on Instagram, you can go on these things and hear what everyone's doing, what they're eating. What I'm eating might not benefit you. What you're eating is not going to benefit me. And if this isn't like proof in the pudding, I don't know what is. It's such a good reminder to like slow down, tune into your body, and really pay attention to those signals. At what point through this entire journey did you realize that digestion is really connected to basically everything and really the foundation of our health?
You know, I would say that I have to credit the doctor that I went to because he was the first person that actually, A, truly listened to me. And I didn't feel like I was being gaslit, but B, was able to help me understand how interconnected all my symptoms were, right? So when we really think about what we'll get into is, you know, detoxing through the colon and pooping and eliminating every day, when you are not doing that, the system starts to back up. So if you think of this as like, you know, in functional medicine, we'll give different analogies, but if you have a funnel or you have a bucket and that bucket is becoming, you know, full, eventually it's going to spill over and that's going to start to show up in other, you know, areas. So if you are chronically constipated, or let's say you have opposite of this, urgent diarrhea, right? Your gut is off. That is a signal. That's your check engine light that something is not going smoothly. Digestion should be a silent event. Sure, with the shifts and changes of our menstrual cycle, you know, estrogen, progesterone in pregnancy when progesterone's high, right? Like we know that slows things down. We can have some of those shifts, but they should really be subtle. We should know, we could be aware, okay, hey, I should take a little bit more magnesium, you know, 3 days before my period because progesterone is really high here the week before. So if we think about that, just as a check engine light, what's going on here is bacteria is overgrowing, it's fermenting, and then that's creating gas and inflammation. That's going to create leaky gut, and things are going to get out into the bloodstream, and they're going to go circulate. Where are they going to go? They're going to cross the blood-brain barrier. Gut on fire, brain on fire. Here's all of our mood disorders. Here's all that brain fog, forgetfulness, fatigue. It's going to go back in line to the liver. Liver is going to have to try to process all of this again, in addition to everything else it's trying to process, including toxins and hormones, just all the things we're exposed to. And so you're not flushing things out the way you should. Again, that's just going to back the system up. And that's where we start to see it impact all the systems of the body. So for example, when we go on the autoimmune side and we think about Hashimoto's, rheumatoid arthritis, I had that as a kid. I mean, I really wish that we knew the power of functional medicine when I was dealing with that, because I think I could have prevented, you know, the decade later Hashimoto's diagnosis had we calmed the storm and got the immune system to calm or, you know, bring back into homeostasis. That is the true root cause. When people think about root cause healing, it's helping your immune system stay regulated. It's very smart. God designed us so intricately. But when we get stuck in certain phases or the immune system is overactive, so I am very prone to have an overactive immune response, I stay stuck. And then therefore, I sequester things, right? And that's where we start to see some of the autoimmune, the disease, the cancer, the, you know, proliferation of these things that we don't want. We have to be able to get into autophagy and different immune pathways, which we don't have time to, you know, really dive into. But genetics can be very powerful. However, I do want to say it's your diet, your lifestyle, and the environment that we are in. And so understanding, and I think you mentioned this for yourself as well, how much of an impact our environment can have on our body. If we are in mold or we're working in mold or, you know, going to certain environments that have some of that musty smell or, you know, like my son goes to a jiu-jitsu place and I leave with a headache. I cannot go there. Because I know that there is something there. I would bet $100 or more that it's mold, but it could be other things as well. So it's just understanding and being in tune with your body. How do I feel in this environment? So for individuals maybe living in it, I'll have them leave for a week or two. Hey, do you feel better when you go on vacation? Or can you go stay at your mom's house for a period of time? And let's see if you feel better out of that environment. Because if you do, we know it's your environment, like these different triggers. So lifestyle and environmental factors, of course, are going to be very important with understanding your genetics and different pathways, what you're more prone to, because that's the beauty of when you have that knowledge, how you can shift and how you can support your body in different ways. And even down to things like, okay, where am I living? What's around me? You know, am I living in a suburban area? So for me, I'm right by two major highways. We got the big shopping center. We got all these off gases from all the gas stations. I'm not sensitive to environmental toxins like that, but I know that I need to support my body and my liver because I'm exposed to that. I love walking outside. It's like my favorite thing to do. Walk around the little lake that we have. Okay, let's just support binding to some of those things so that I don't start to sequester them. So that was a very long-winded way to say that doctor listening to me and actually being able to explain to me, this is all connected. And if we don't fix your constipation, everything else will continue to get worse. And eventually that's when we start to see, you know, beyond the Hashimoto's and the attack on the thyroid, we can start to, you know, get on the rabbit hole of other disease proliferation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really smart that he helped you build that connection, because you're not putting a Band-Aid just on the constipation. You're going into the root cause. You're figuring out the entire, how to support your entire body. And that's something that I feel like we don't learn that much, or as we're going through doctors, you know, we're kind of getting passed to specialist, where, you know, if our doctors aren't always on the same page and talking about that connection, which a lot of them aren't, it's hard for us to get to that conclusion ourselves too, right? So we were kind of talking offline too. Everyone that's listening today, I have a lot of cancer preventers listening. I have a lot of cancer survivors listening. Everyone knows my story ad nauseum, that I struggled with recovery so much coming out of cancer treatments. It was one of the worst time of my life. I feel like I was able to get through chemo, but really figuring out my gut health post-treatments was the biggest struggle. And going to my doctors, going to the oncologist, the team, everyone just kept telling me, kind of like how everyone was telling you, everything's normal. Your labs are normal. It's okay. Everyone's telling me, like, you're eating everything right. Everything's fine. Just give it time. Just give it time. Your body needs time. And deep down, I knew, no, something is very off. I couldn't absorb food. My stomach wasn't even giving me hunger signals. There was no movement going on. Like, it just freaked me out more than anything. And just knowing that you can't get better, I couldn't get my energy back after cancer because of it, to say the least. That was like one of many symptoms. You know, the PTSD and the anxiety also, you know, just kept getting worse and worse because my gut was so thrown off. So I guess one of my big questions to you is, how much does cancer treatments really disrupt the gut? Like, what are we looking at here? Because I know, at least for me, I didn't do radiation, but I did chemo, but not only chemo, but antibiotics and steroids for 9 months at least.
Yeah. So when we look at just chemo, 50 to 80% of patients will have nausea, diarrhea, abdominal cramping, pain, some level, at least in the research, what's reported of digestive issues. And so there's a couple of reasons for this. Studies show pretty clearly that it creates this acute dysbiosis. So what I like to layman's terms this, because when you really get into the weeds of the science and the microbiome, it's very confusing very fast, right? There are trillions of microbes. I want you to imagine that you have a beautiful garden. I don't have a green thumb, but I like pretty gardens, right? So you have a beautiful garden that you want to be plentiful with flowers and you want minimal weeds. When we have dysbiosis, we basically have the opposite, to where we have overgrowth of those weeds and our flowers are little to be seen. And so what happens here is when those bacteria, those microbes are overgrown, they create a lot of inflammation, which we also know now can be intestinal permeability. It's what they call it in the, you know, medical literature, or leaky gut. Things are seeping out into the bloodstream. So we have lost the integrity of the intestinal lining, and it should be nice and tight. These tight junctions now has become a little bit more open and leaky. And so things are getting out to the bloodstream. So we shift away from those good beneficial bacteria that are also very important for your immune system. They are your army. They are your defenders against infections, bacteria, microbes, parasites, things we're exposed to all the time, especially if you have children, especially if you work, you know, in an environment that's out of your home, those types of things. And So that's one component. The second component is when you're going through cancer treatment, whether it is radiation or chemotherapy, that treatment targets rapidly dividing cells. Well, unfortunately, your intestinal lining is also, fortunately and unfortunately, but in this case, unfortunately, your intestinal lining is also made up of rapidly dividing cells because it's turning itself over, which in general is a good thing because we put so much in.
Can repair it.
Right, exactly. And so this isn't just targeting the tumors or, you know, those cells, it's targeting everything. And that is going to alter the ecosystem as well. And when we look just broadly at this, I mentioned earlier the immune system. Most of your immune system resides in your gut. And so you have all of that that's being impaired. Now we're immune compromised, we're inflamed, we're not absorbing things, right? So you mentioned that you were struggling just with energy and really feeling like you were depleted. It's a very big taxing job to undergo those treatments, of course, right? But the thing that we don't yet understand fully is what strains or species, families of, you know, these different microbes are really shifted with some of these treatments. And so, as I mentioned to you off air, I don't know that that's going to be something they will ever fully identify. I think we are coming to understand certain microbes that are what we call keystone and very important to the body, very important for calming down inflammation. I've got some tools that I want to give your listeners and, you know, some of your clients that could be helpful here, but everyone is so bio-individual. So you have to think about the age, their ethnicity, their genetics, what type of cancer, how progressed is it? What is their treatment? How aggressive is the treatment? Those types of things. And so with all of this, that's going to shift, you know, person to person. But I would then say post-treatment or even during treatment, right? There's so much that we can do. I have a lot of tools that I'll use with some of my clients that are undergoing treatment to support just some of the symptoms from, you know, chemo or radiation or immunotherapy, depending upon what they're going through. And then thinking farther beyond that, in which I'm sure your doctor has never talked to you about, but the gut brain access, the gut liver access, the gut liver immune access, like there's all of these, the whole body is interconnected. And so if we are having some of those other symptoms, what could we be doing to support, you know, the brain and some of those neurological symptoms? Well, there's different species of bacteria that can be beneficial from a probiotic standpoint. There are immunoglobulins, different types of even peptides or supports for the tight junctions that we could put in that can be used during and after that can be very helpful to kind of mitigate some of the symptoms, provide that symptom relief, and then fully post-treatment support, you know, the repair process and the rebuild process. I wouldn't come in and eradicate more in terms of like using killers, because if the person's doing antibiotics, right, that has a cost. That's one of the great, what I call gut assassins. And so you have to really think about rebuild, repair and rebuild. So if you have a house that's on fire, you don't want to just put the fire out. You want to clean up the debris and then you want to build a new house and eventually put all the fancy decor and bells and whistles on it, right? That make it so beautiful. That's what you have to think about. And that's really where people can benefit the most to support bringing back, right, your blood cell counts, your vitamin D levels, your ability to absorb all these nutrients and stomach acid that's protective to you that also helps you absorb your nutrients. So one of the questions I know you had sent over for later is like, does it matter what you're basically ingesting or what you're absorbing? And I always say, like, you can be eating a great diet. It's not about what you ingest. It's about what you're able to digest and actually absorb. So you have to have those supports in place. And I can only speak to the cases that I've worked with that are undergoing active treatment. We are absolutely supporting their digestive capacity with stomach acid support, digestive enzymes. And then depending upon if they have a gallbladder or not, we are supporting bile in some way, shape, or form. You know, again, depending upon the person and what they need.
Those are some of the tools that you're using in real time for people that are actively in treatments. What are some of the tools if someone's just coming out of recovery and they're like, obviously now we know why we're bloated or constipated or having diarrhea or eating everything, you know, food sensitivities, right? We know that's coming from the chemo, the steroids, you've done such a great job describing what happens inside of our body. I always tell people too, that's exactly what chemo is. It kills everything, not just specific cancer cells. It's killing everything in the body. So it's almost like you're wiped out. It's a desert and you have to begin to repair and regrow in some way, shape, or form. I know everyone's bio-individual, but what's advice you can give to the audience? Like if someone's like, I'm dealing with this chronic constipation so much, or I feel the urge to go to the bathroom and I sit down and nothing's happening. Like, what are some of the first steps that they can take walking out of treatments that can help put them at least on a solid path going forward?
Yeah. So I will always say test and address, you know, according to the bio individual, especially because we just don't know what their terrain. So when we think about nose to tail, you have your sinus cavities, which is part of it's an extension of your microbiome. You have your oral microbiome, which again, we swallow, all these things we're breathing in, right? All that's going into the gut. So I like stool testing because then I can get really granular and specific on what we need to be doing in terms of repopulating different microbes, maybe that are lost, right? Or have been depleted.
Is that what you're specifically looking for? Is like what microbes are lost, or are you looking for, and like, obviously, like if it's like SIBO or yeast or, you know, overgrowth, like you're looking for those specific triggers that would be causing a lot of these symptoms.
Yes. Now coming out of treatment, if I knew that the person had, because there is research to show that yes, there are a lot of individuals struggling with small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So kind of going back to what I mentioned before with your digestive capacity, you have all these different gastric juices that are very protective. First in the stomach acid, right? That's very important to break down your food and proteins, especially amino acids, but it also is a chemical messenger. Everything is enzymatic function in the body. So getting your pancreas to release pancreatic enzymes. One thing we see post-illness, it could be foodborne illness or another virus sickness, could be that you took antibiotics, is that your pancreas generally is on the insufficient side. It's not giving you a lot of those enzymes to break down your protein, carbs, fats, antioxidants, all these things. And so digestive enzymes, you know, that I mentioned that could be very helpful. Or bitters, like you mentioned, love bitters as well. Just depends upon the person, what they're willing to do and, you know, convenience and whatnot. And then bile flow as well. Bile should circulate through the small intestine 15 times every time we eat. It's our built-in antimicrobial. It's our built-in cholesterol removal, estrogen removal, like toxin removal. It's basically, think of your Dawn dish soap that scrubs everything out. Helps you get your fat-soluble vitamins and nutrients and antioxidants, but at the same time, it triggers motilin for your motility and peristalsis to be able to poo. And then it also triggers insulin from the islet cells from the pancreas, right? Through the liver, all these things have to communicate with each other.
And that's directly connected to bile, you were saying?
Yes. Yeah, I want to write a book on bile because bile is so important. Like, I could rant about bile all day.
Yeah, I mean, it's controlling so many different things. So when I'm hearing you say that, like, wow, that all falls under the bile umbrella. So if you have low bile, then all of those things are going to be affected and show up in the body in some way.
Yeah, and then we would think about, okay, so if we're not eliminating, we could have, you know, stones being formed. Bile ducts are very, very, I mean, they're miles in length. So there's a lot of nooks and crannies, same with the colon. There's a lot of places for things to get stuck, right? To become sluggish, to go wrong. So that can impair your estrogen detoxification, depending upon the person's genetics. Then we go back and we think about, okay, is she clearing down the right pathways? So for like estrogen-based cancers, I always run a Dutch test because there's three doors, essentially, think of it that way, that you can clear your estrogen or it can exit. And one is more DNA damaging and associated with growth of cancer. And then the other is more on the side of more inflammation, inflammatory, I feel this, or maybe I'm having, you know, fibroids, cysts, different things like that. And then one is protective. So we want to clear out the protective pathway. But if we don't have proper elimination and proper bile support to do that, we're going to have an imbalance here. So it's not just estrogen level. It's also which door is it, you know, going out of. But you brought up something that I want to go back and circle to here. So if someone's coming just out of treatment and their gut is a mess, it's totally wrecked. I personally, as a practitioner, would not be going in with more killers for a period of time. If the person had just gone through antibiotics, right? A lot of this very stressful chemo, radiation, steroids. I'm going to go more on the side of how do I help them with their defenses? Because that's the ultimate thing, is you want to be resilient. And for that, we have to have good microbial defenses. We have to have support for that gut lining and integrity. Because if you just go in and you kill, 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 I think one of your other questions that you put on the list was, can you overdo it? Absolutely, you can overdo it, right? And so it's a fine balance. And so let's say I did a stool test, right? I'm looking for what microbes are lost. Yeah, I'm looking at what's overgrown too. I expect to see some things there overgrown, because when you are using these harsh treatments and you're kind of bombing the gut with antibiotics, you set the stage, you just like open the door for other things to proliferate. So yeah, we're looking at that as well, but I'm also looking at various markers for digestive inflammation. So this is where we're getting into like calprotectin is kind of the gold standard, but MMP9, lysozyme, there's a bunch of different ones that can kind of tell us where do we need to target those tight junctions and the mucosal barrier, because that is your first line of defense. So you're already a weak person, like a weak host, essentially coming out. You've lost a lot of your defenses. You're not a weak person, but weak host, right? You've lost a lot of your defenses. So I take the approach of build that person up. We can get to the SIBO or other things if it's still, you know, a major problem in a month or two. But we've got to spend some time repairing. And then we could come back, right, with some maybe antimicrobials. And then we would take a low and slow approach, because you also don't want to beat up an immune system that's already compromised. And if, for example, somebody's white blood cell counts are low, we want to be cautious with that. We might spend a couple months doing more on the side of, you know, rebuilding, trying to get those white blood cells back up into a normal range.
Which is every cancer survivor out there. We're coming out with very, very low white blood cells. So would you start rebuilding and like building up those defenses with food and nutrition, or would you start with supplementation or both?
Both. Yeah. So I think one thing here is obviously God designed us so intricately. And when we look at nature, we do have everything in nature that we need. One of my favorite supports that I would put in, and I would feel comfortable saying this for anybody, is immunoglobulins. That's a dairy-free form of colostrum. So there's a lot of evidence there to show how that can support your immune system. It can support the tight junctions in the gut. So secretory IgA, when that's very low, that is an immune defense that's been lost. We'll see it typically very high when there's like an active infection. Your immune system's responding to a microbe, right? It could be SIBO, H. pylori, parasite, yeast, candida, whatever. But when it's very low, that's one of the things that we would use to kind of build that back up. But it also has a nice binding, gentle binding for different types of toxins. And if you are in that space where like, you're just not really sure what day it is, right? What kind of day it is? Because I know, at least for the clients I've worked with, you have good days and you have more rough days. And sometimes a food that didn't bother you is now bothering you. So it can kind of help with that. From a probiotic standpoint, I'm a big fan of pre and probiotic rich foods, right? In nature, I love bone broth, very healing and soothing as long as the person doesn't have histamine reactions. But for like, let's say abdominal cramping and pain and more of the, because there are a lot of research papers that show with some of these treatments, you can get colitis and different types of colitis and inflammatory bowel disease as well. So I would use, it's a product from Metagenics called Ultraflora Intensive Care, and it's a very specific strain. It's a one strain probiotic that can help calm down inflammation, and it can be used for abdominal pain as well. So it's Lactobacillus planetarium 299B. Not that anybody cares about that, but that's the strain, if you look in the research, that, you know, can be helpful and it could be gentle.
I was going to say, could you eat too much or too many probiotic foods? If you're coming out and you're seeing all this stuff online, you're like, oh, I need to eat probiotic rich foods. Could you be overdoing it with the nutrition side of it and it could do more harm than good?
Yes. Same with fiber. So it's always a low and slow approach. When you're reseeding the microbiome, you don't want to just like bomb or like chug a whole bottle of kombucha. Probably not going to go too well. You know, and so I always say, hey, start with, you know, a couple tablespoons of things, see how you do, how you tolerate it. Let your gut be like, oh, okay, this is good for me. Because yes, there's definitely a tipping point, just like there is with fiber. People are like, oh, I'm constipated or I have diarrhea, right? And then they just like go in and try to eat a bunch of things, and that can make it worse on either end. So always a low and slow approach, especially with fermented foods. So here we're going to think about your, as I mentioned before, right, kombucha or kefir or sauerkraut, you know, those types of things. Let your body get used to that, and then you can slowly work up, you know, to a quarter a cup, a half a cup over time. And then one thing that I will say, just in terms of like the kefir yogurt side, you may find that you tolerate some but not others because of the sugar and the ingredients in there. So that's a big thing, you know, that I always say is like as many one ingredient whole foods as you possibly can. I would love for everybody to be thinking about pectins too. So those are found in the peels of our fruits. And so you could even make like an apple pectin where it's just like an apple sauce, but you keep your skin on, put that into like a slow cooker. I have a recipe for that. I could even send it to you, but put it in a slow cooker and have a couple tablespoons of that a day. Some products will have that in there, but that can also be very helpful. So diversity, I think, is very important. But if you are in a very compromised state and you are lacking a lot of those microbes that do help you break down different types of fibers or carbohydrates, you know, you may want to err on the side for a short period of time. This is not a lifelong thing. You may want to err on the side of like a lower FODMAP protocol, or if there's a lot of histamine issues. We're seeing histamine and mast cell issues explode, especially since COVID and the way that the virus and jabs have impacted people. And so for some, fermented foods are going to be off the table for a period of time. Or, you know, again, we're going to have to go on a low histamine diet for a period of time. But I believe that when you restore balance to the microbiome, you can restore diversity with your diet and not have to fear food because your body should be resilient. You mentioned, you know, your reaction to like a Caesar salad even. Like, okay, well, what could we do then that could bring back my ability to tolerate these things? Because a Caesar salad is definitely not inherently bad, right? And so it's just looking at the health of the terrain and what's going on in terms of microbes. But most importantly, and I think a lot of practitioners, at least in my world, go too heavily on the kill side and not enough on that. Just build your defenses up. Because if you build your defenses up, those microbes will outcrowd or, you know, take care of those other overgrowth. You can't just kill, because if you don't replace and repopulate, it's just going to keep coming back. You will end up in this loop of SIBO coming back. You do well, you relapse.
No, I love that approach. I think it's so smart. It's 100% true, because we have to trust what our gut can actually do at the end of the day. So rebuilding it up and supporting it so it can naturally kill off the other things that are happening, you know, those are symptoms of other things, is really smart, and also takes away the overwhelm of feeling like you have to clear up everything individually too when you're supporting one area of it and like crowding out. I love that. How would somebody know if they had a histamine intolerance?
Oh gosh, so this can show up a lot of ways, but think allergy-like symptoms. So you can have skin flares, rashing, flushing, hiving, itching, sinus, you know, issues where you're getting like post-nasal drip, you're sneezing, right? Itchy, watery eyes. For some individuals, it can show up far beyond that. And so it could be a buildup of histamine that's causing a lot of bloating. They are feeling more of the fatigue or brain fog. So histamine reactions are flares where mast cell activation syndrome is like consistent. And we have a huge guide coming out about this, just with all different types of supports, because we do see so many people out there like just taking Benadryl or Zyrtec or Pepcid or all these histamine blockers.
Putting the Band-Aid on it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Yeah. So we want to degrade the histamine in the gut. And we have something called DAO enzyme that can help do that. And you have it in your body. But again, if you don't have enough of it, then that's where things can start to arise. Some of the common histamine foods would be, again, fermented foods. It could be...
You know, why? Why fermented foods? Why would that irritate? Do they have natural histamine levels in them?
Yeah, histamine builds up over time. So even if you have, let's say, meal prep, right? We prep on Sunday, and then by Wednesday or Thursday, I'm eating this, histamine builds up. So for people who are meal prepping and have histamine issues, it's like put it in the freezer, take it out the morning that you want to do it, because histamine you know, just over time is going to rise. But you could have like wine. I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, avocado, spinach, strawberries. There could just be like some, there's a lot.
So random. It's just the most random things like wine and spinach and avocados in the same group as sauerkraut. Like it's just mind blowing. I feel like I overdid it on probiotics. Like I was eating so many probiotic foods. I feel like I was overdoing it a little bit, which caused like an upswing in my gut. I feel like I fell into that. So I wonder if I have some sort of histamine intolerance or I'm sensitive to it or something like that, because
you bring up a good point there in terms of like overdoing it, because you want a balance, right? Too much of a good thing is not always a good thing either. And so it's, you know, especially this is my big quarrel with conventional medicine and antibiotics, grinds my gears to no end. They just throw antibiotics at you, in which we actually have research, and you can go on many websites and see from even our government agency that in fact, about 60% of what we prescribe is incorrect, right? Well, over time, we've built something called antibiotic resistance because microbes want to survive, just like mold mycotoxins. You will never get rid of all of them. They've evolved with us. They will forever find a way to survive and compete, right, in our environment. So when you have an antibiotic, let's say, for example, just let's go UTI. Yeah, just take a probiotic with your antibiotic. Okay, well, what probiotic? Because there are thousands of strains. There are ones that are very specific that we would use. Like I have two brands that I love for people with these reoccurring vaginal issues, UTIs, BV, those types of things. And then also thinking about when you're on the antibiotic, there's different strains I want to be using to support antibiotic reactions, like antibiotic associated diarrhea or nausea or different things there. And it seems common sense to me that if someone's going to be able to prescribe this, they should also know how to recommend. And they don't. They literally don't.
They don't even say to eat a probiotic food or take a supplement with it. It's not even in the same breath. I don't even think it's on the same wavelength. Like there's no follow-up with it. And I feel like antibiotics are just prescribed like candy over and over. I was just having this conversation with a fellow mom where her daughter was sick and, oh, it's not this, it's not that, but let's just give her an antibiotic just to, you know, it'll give her some relief or whatever the case is. And I'm like, oh my gosh, just to throw something at it to see if it sticks, knowing that it's going to create
is it bacterial? Like, what are we dealing with here?
It's just wild. It's wild. And it makes it terrifying too, because, you know, your mom, you have young kids. I have young kids. Every time we take them to the doctor, you know, the first thing they want to do is put them on antibiotics versus, you know, figuring out a different alternative. So if you don't know, you're just taking the doctor's recommendations and then setting your kid up and their gut up for, you know, months of distress, if not sometimes a lifetime of distress, you know, if it happens chronically over and over. What do you think is the biggest gut mistakes that people or cancer survivors are making at this point in time?
Throwing darts at the wall.
Just guessing.
Time and time again, shiny object syndrome. I saw it on social media. I saw it on TikTok. I saw it on Instagram, wherever. Just like with probiotics, right? They are very strain specific. I have a probiotic guide. I'll give you links to all of this. All of this is free. Just like, you know, resources that we've built over time where I go through and I'm talking about different strains that would be used for different purposes and things. I have an antibiotic repair guide too. If I'm on an antibiotic, here's the probiotic I want to take with it. Following it, here's things that I want to be doing to restore. And many of that, you know, could be helpful for your listeners and even post-cancer. But yeah, I don't fault the person because again, they're being failed by a medical system that is designed to keep us sick. You know, we can go on and on and on about even treatments and methodologies and what about red light therapy and what about fasting and what about autophagy and what about all of these other things, but they never touch that and they don't want to touch that and they don't want to think about it. There's actually, so we're in the same area. This is so fun for us to find that out as we were talking off air, but there's a functional oncologist that I have kind of worked with. We met for coffee and she was at Northwestern in, you know, our area here. She left there after I don't even know, like 20 or 30 years. She's an amazing oncologist and started her functional practice. And she sent me all these resources and all of these things and why we would use, for example, ivermectin and fenbendazole. And I was talking to her about a case. Actually, we ended up meeting for coffee because my client had previously worked with her. So it was really cool. And we're partnering to navigate how do we have our clients or her patients discuss with their oncologists who are doing their conventional care, these modalities and these therapies so that they can be on board and that can be a care team and they won't touch it. It's so frustrating.
It is so frustrating. And it's also frustrating too, because it leaves us to have to go to other places to figure out information. So then we lean on social media for information, or we're Googling, or, you know, whatever the case is. And so we're almost trying to piece it together because our medical team is not saying or giving us these tools. And it's up to us then to have to advocate and like figure it out. And then people are just trying 500 different things to see what works, literally out of pure frustration. Like, that's what happened to me. I was trying everything and anything out of just complete desperation and frustration. And it's such a gap in our healthcare system. I just don't understand how we can let people walk out of treatments. If you break a bone, you go to OT, you go to PT. You go through cancer, you get absolutely no protocol on how to recover and how to rebuild and what to do and what to take and what testing to get done, right? A path, just some path. I think there's people are so thirsty for it, and we're also so desperate for it, because when you've gone through a diagnosis, you are terrified. You never want to be back in that cancer chair. You never want to have a reoccurrence. You know sometimes that the odds are stacked against you, and you need some sort of North Star to be like, it's more than just killing. We have to readdress the terrain. We have to figure out every imbalance that's going on in your body. We have to look deeper into your genetics. We have to look at your diet, your stress, your nervous system, like everything, right? And it's so rare to find that. Even in Illinois, I feel like it's very, very rare to find it. And so I completely agree with what you're saying. It's so frustrating. And I think that's why a lot of people make that mistake, to circle back to that original question of like the biggest mistakes cancer survivors are making about their gut, throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks, because there's such a lack of information for us and we are terrified at the core. So we just do whatever we can. And it's sad. It's sad that that's where it is. But you and I both could go on a tangent. I get so incredibly angry about it.
It's like simple things. I'd love to hear from you. You know, you came out of this and you felt so anxious, depleted, and exhausted. Did they even run? And I'm going to guess maybe they did. In that case, I don't know. Actually, this is 8 years ago, but I know now, like, the basics. Okay, vitamin D, B12, zinc. I mean, were they even running some of those markers that would show us some of those depletions? And then when we think about, for example, the hormonal impact and serotonin, anxiety and depression, GABA, glutamate, all these different neurotransmitters, I know just from the clients that I work with that are mostly complex cases, a lot of them have been prescribed antidepressants for their gut issues because it's IBS. It's irritable bowel syndrome. That's all we got for you. It's a syndrome. We don't have any tests for it, which is complete BS. There are reasons. I was sharing with you offline, like, I'm doing a gastritis podcast tomorrow. Only 1-2% of people truly have gastritis. How many are diagnosed though? Because it's just a label that they'll put on individuals. And it's really about, again, identifying what's the trigger here? What's the root cause? And even in conventional medicine, the way that we interpret blood chemistry, I have a 5-day webinar series. It's a free thing that people can go and watch. We break down every portion of the comprehensive panel we do over those 5 days. And we tell you exactly what high or low can mean. And a lot of it is digestive capacity. A lot of it is, do you have low stomach acid? Are you anemic? Are you pernicious anemia? Are you, like, you know, struggling with microbes or parasites or heavy metal toxicity? But conventional medicine does not read blood work that way. You are lucky if you get a phone call or even a MyChart message to say, things look good. I mean, I was postpartum and I went to Dr. Flannery's office in Edward Hospital, Naperville area. Love them. But it took me building a relationship with her over years to get her to run my vitamin D consistently, to get her to run ferritin after I was bleeding for 12 weeks after having my son, and to get her to run my free T3 every time she did my labs. She knew I wasn't going to leave that office unless free T3 was on there for thyroid. And so I'm just curious for you, blood work, I mean, that's conventional. Come on, it's scientific, it's repeatable, it's reliable. If we can read these things, and it's all backed by science, by the way, why can't they? And did they even bother to do that when you're sitting in their chair, you know, post therapy, telling them how you feel, or did they just prescribe antidepressant or recommend, you know, other medication?
That's a great question. So they prescribe antidepressants from day one of being diagnosed with cancer. Like, you're kind of given a written script of like forever Xanax, right? Ended my chemo treatments, and it was like with 3 months come back for blood work. And that's really what they monitor. So I was getting blood work done, but my blood work was falling within the normal range. That doesn't mean optimal. It probably was not optimal, but it was probably within a normal range, which is why everyone's like, you're doing everything right. Let me see I saw the nutritionist, your diet, everything looks great. You're eating enough fiber and blah, blah, blah. And that was the frustrating part, kind of like your story, right? When you're getting the runaround where, yeah, okay, everything looks okay. Like the vitamins and my white blood cells were always chronically low. They told me I could never do anything about that, that they would be low forever because of this. So that was something that was always stuck in my head. And that was it. And then they're like, no, just give it time. And I was kind of just sent off. So you're stuck to think, well, everyone's telling me everything's okay. My blood work is coming back okay. I guess I'm going to have white blood cell issues for the rest of my life. And so is this all in my head? And you start to kind of, you know, go through this cycle in your head. We're like, is this really happening? And then also, it's just a lot of people are telling you, the doctors are telling you, it's normal. It's normal to have anxiety after cancer, which it is. I will not discredit that. It absolutely is. But there's also a difference between normal anxiety because you've had a diagnosis or some PTSD that's happened, and severe anxiety because of a gut-brain disconnect, because your gut is off. Those are two very different things. And that's never explained to us either. So you could be walking around with like really debilitating anxiety thinking this is normal, or even OCD tendencies I see show up in my clients a lot, right? From the anxiety where it's like, well, how much is it just the trauma and how much is it the gut is off, that your foundation is breaking down and it's really starting to affect, you know, your entire body. So it's that fine line and there's no guidance around it. And it makes it just very difficult. And, you know, I was talking to you earlier about the nervous system and how I really focus on the nervous system and mindset coming out of cancer. And I know our nervous system has so much to do with digestion as well, right? We could probably be eating a perfect diet and everything looks great. We have our probiotic rich foods. We have our fiber, we have our polyphenols. We have all the things, right? But if our nervous system is completely dysregulated, that can have an effect on our digestion as well. Like that mind-body connection that you're not getting from conventional medicine. And you're kind of walking out of like, oh my gosh, I can't poop. I'm so constipated. But I'm also like fight or flight 24/7 walking around and the body's just completely stressed out.
I know you had put one of the questions in here around some of the most helpful things. And I always go back to your point about nervous system, eating hygiene. It's so simple. I heard a stat. So I'm studying with Karan Krishnov. He's actually here in Chicago too, but he is a microbiologist and he was talking about 60% of GI issues being resolved if we would just sit down with our food, chew, be undistracted. And it's really hard. Like, okay, so you're a mom of two. I'm a mom of two. I got a 13-month-old and a 6-month-old. You know, I run a big practice that's international. And the other day, I had my client calls, all the things. I get, you know, the baby from daycare. It's like 4:30, come back. I realize, I need to eat. Like, I have not eaten, like, actual lunch today. I had a nice breakfast before I started my calls, but dealing with different fires, and I need to eat. Well, now I have a screaming baby who is in his, you know, witching hour moment on my lap while I'm eating. And all I'm thinking about is how awful this is for my nervous system to be because I am definitely not in rest and digest state. So in that moment, it's like, okay, slow down, at least chew my food, at least savor my food. Mentally, I'm thinking about this, you know, but we go through these phases and seasons of life where sometimes it's just not possible. And I think it's better to eat and get something in you than not. But if we could really go back to how we were created as primal beings to eat, it is that you aren't eating at the computer or with your phone, right? Watching TV, doing all of these things that are just distractions, that you are sitting down, you're looking at your food, you're being grateful, you're thinking about, man, I am excited for this. I'm salivating as I'm talking about it. I'm salivating because I have digestive enzymes in my saliva. And so I've mentioned earlier on our chemical digestion. That's your brain. Bitters, that's the big purpose of them. They stimulate your brain to start communicating to the different digestive organs that it's going to be time to ingest food and we're going to need to break this down and absorb it. So eating hygiene and really having maybe some mantras around this food is nourishing. I have to do this with some individuals who have maybe gone through very severe gut issues and fear food, right? They're afraid that I'm going to eat this and it's going to run right through me and I'm going to have an accident, or that I'm going to end up with, you know, again, abdominal cramping or pain or whatever. So it could be somebody who's in like a SIBO recovery, bringing back FODMAP slowly, really having that mantra, and this is safe. This is nourishing to me. So the biggest thing that I would drive home to anybody is that in any type of healing process, we have to create safety. We have to create safety as you're talking about getting into that healing mindset. We have to create safety with how we are in our being and how we are feeling, you know? And so sometimes it's going to feel really woo-woo and voodoo and whatever else you want to call it, quacky. Because again, if you talked to me 20 years ago, I'd have been like, functional medicine, that's a bunch of quack.
Talk to your food. Just kidding.
Really try to like put your fork down. Some of these like habits or things that you can do, just put your fork down, chew your food really, really well. I mean, right now I am trying to educate my son repeatedly because he just inhales his food. You know, how this is going to impact your stomach, and you're going to have an upset stomach, and you're not going to feel like this food really energizes you. And he loves to play sports. So I'm always talking to him about, you know, building muscle, being faster, feeling good on the field. And he was with grandma one day before his soccer game. I forgot exactly what it was that he had, maybe cereal or something that morning. We don't give our kids cereal, but grandma gets away with anything. So his stomach hurt. Right. And so we had a long conversation around that too, of, hey, the types of foods that we choose to do before activity and, you know, whatnot are very important, but also how we eat those foods. So wherever you can, try to focus on that eating hygiene. I have a reel I just posted a few weeks ago. Like, I got called out. I am not perfect with this. I was at a conference. We worked out in the morning. I was doing client work. And then, oh, we need to go down to the conference room. It's starting. So I had a rice cake and a peanut butter and banana. And I was walking. And one of the guys goes, would you tell your clients to do that? No, I wouldn't, right? So it could be walking, it could be driving, and a lot of us, again, in different seasons, like, oh man, like I'm grabbing the diaper bag and a protein bar and whatever. So just that could be something that you could really start to focus on as well, and that will help you. But kind of like we talked about before, I think it's pretty safe to say immunoglobulins are great. That will support your gut lining. It'll support your immune system. It's dairy-free. So if you're looking at like the ingredients, Immunolin is the trademarked. And so again, it's like colostrum, but it's dairy-free for those who are sensitive. Colostrum can be fine too if you don't have issues with dairy. Some level of digestive bitters or digestive enzymes and maybe some stomach acid support can always go a really long way, especially in high stress times. And then as I mentioned to you, Michelle, what I'll do is I'll send you a little PDF that you could share with your listeners with some links that I talked about, as well as some post-cancer care. So there are supplement companies like Supreme Nutrition, for example. They have some that are very helpful for chemo and radiation during treatment. And I know you don't work with people going through this. This is not medical advice. This is just a resource that you could look into if you are somebody dealing with active, you know, treatment and you're wondering, are there any natural supports that I could take to kind of help my system? I think those are some really great herbal formulas that they have that are single and strain backed by research. And so I'm happy to share that with your listeners as well.
Yeah, thank you. That would be really great. I know a lot of people would really benefit from that. I get asked all the time about supplements, which companies to go with, what's good, what's not. As we wrap up here, tell people a little bit about where they can find you, about your business and what exactly you do so they can reach out if they want more targeted help with their gut health. And you guys, I also want to mention, you have to go to her Instagram. I'm obsessed with it. I check in on it every couple of days because she has amazing advice, but it's so digestible and she breaks it down in such an easy way where you can walk away from it like, okay, I know three things I could work on. And it's just great. There's so much really good information there. So if you're into gut health, if you're struggling, her Instagram is a great place to land.
Thank you. So yes, on Instagram, I am at the Poop Queen, but I do run a large functional medicine practice, Fit Mom Functional Health, and we work with women all around the world, US, Canada, the UK, Mexico, Thailand. We got clients everywhere. We just support them. And obviously outside of that, we don't just work with chronic gut health cases, but we do work with children. We have a pediatric side. We work with fertility. We have a practitioner that is great with that. And on my team, we have several that are fantastic with, you know, immunocompromised individuals. And for that, we lump in chronic complex cases. It does not have to be cancer. We do have people that have, you know, and are going through treatment as well as post-cancer and recovery. We've had clients working with us that found out during, you know, their protocols that this, you know, was a breast cancer case that we had. And the power of having a practitioner work with you is far beyond a test and a protocol, right? It is really somebody who's there to guide you and to support you and to have collaborative care and to just help you kind of navigate. Because again, we know how conventional medicine works in silos, where in functional medicine, it is truly a holistic approach. And that's not just your body and all 11 systems that are interconnected, but it is mind, body, right? And soul. So thinking about, and I just did a live this morning, just randomly on my social media, I was really in a funk. Where do I go on those days? I turn to my devotional. I turn on some praise music. Normally I'm studying or listening to a podcast or whatnot. And I just was like, what do I need right now? So we really help you, you know, from that standpoint too, of like you have said several times, the nervous system work, the daily lifestyle habits, how do we actually put these things into action and truly just want to help you understand what the heck is going on? Like, what do all these symptoms mean? Because if you go on the interwebs or you go to ChatGPT, which I don't advise doing, and you're like, I have fatigue. Well, fatigue could be a lot of different root causes, right? I have bloating. Generally, that's going to be dysbiosis, but a lot of times it can also be poor bile flow, a gut, a liver bile issue. And maybe you don't have a gallbladder. That could be part of it. It could be estrogen. It could be hormones. So we do work everything with the body, not just gut. So that's why I have a team of 7 practitioners that each kind of specialize. And we have a few different options. So you can always do like a standalone blood work. We want to do comprehensive blood work and we'll spend an hour going over that with you, helping you understand how it correlates to your symptoms. We do have some other one-off tests that we'll do, but truly if we're going through a process with someone and we're looking at everything and through gut healing protocols, balancing hormones, maybe using peptides in some cases, that's our 6-month program. So we have a few different things and you can go to our website, fitmom.co, not com, .co, and you can learn more about our programs there or just shoot me a message. I am in my messenger at the Poop Queen on Instagram.
Amazing. I will list all of her freebies and resources she mentioned throughout the podcast in the show notes. I will link her Instagram as well as her website so you guys have direct access. Thank you so much, Liz. It was so great getting to know the gut better and getting to know you better. You really shared some valuable information and I'm forever grateful. So thank you so much.
You're so welcome. Thank you.